In Lystra there sat a man who was lame. He had been that way from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked at him directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, "Stand up on your feet." At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted to him in the Lycian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. The priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought bulls and wreaths to the city gates, because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to them. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of this, they tore their clothes and rushed out into the crowd, shouting, "Friends, why are you doing this? We too are only human like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God, who made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. In the past, he let all nations go their own way, yet he has not left you himself without testimony. He has shown you kindness by giving you rain from the heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy." Even with these words, they had difficulty keeping the crowd from sacrificing to them. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking that he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe.
This talk is called, "Do You Hear What I'm Saying?" And as we probably found out in that game, it's quite hard to hear what people are saying if you don't have the right ear. Some people had been in the family of that language and had heard those things. They might not think they can understand them, but they could hear. They had the ear for those languages. Some people had never heard those words before and came up with some really good examples of guessing, which were thoroughly enjoyable to hear. But thank you for engaging in that game with all the joy that it gave me, and hopefully you as well. There's going to be a bit of a talk about you like getting to know me. It's a bit of a weird one because I've been here 2 weeks. This is the first talk I get to do in front of everyone. There's new people here who I've not met. I've not met the uniform groups before, so thank you and welcome. How you doing? I know some of your leaders a bit, but I don't know you guys, and you don't know who I am. So you get to hear a bit about me in this, but it's part of what we're talking about. So I have spent my whole life trying to understand people, a people group who are just ununderstandable, frankly. They are impossible to know what they're doing. They change their minds every 2 seconds, and that group is parents. Just going to put it out there. It's parents. Young people, you know it's true. They just don't make any sense. I'm a parent myself. I don't make no sense. When I'm telling my kids off, it's just like, "Why are you telling me off? Because you haven't done the thing I want you to do. What's the thing you want me to do? I don't know. Just do it." But that's the reality, isn't it? Like, come on, you agree with me, right? Parents, ununderstandable. Like, different language, different world. True? No? Your parents are amazing. That's right. Your carers, your grandmas, everyone, all amazing. Granddads, uncles, aunties, all amazing. The front row just got great families. Like, whoever's there, whoever's here with them, like, you've done well. My own kids, probably not going to say the same thing. I'm just going to put it out there. But for me, I was the first person in my nuclear family. See, I'm going to have to translate here. When I say family in this context, I mean the small group which is in my house. And actually, in my culture, family is a much wider word. It means, like, literally everyone who's ever come through your door. It literally does. Like, just people, like, you know. My mum will say, "This person that you met in 1976, something's happened." And I'm like, "I don't know who the person is. I really don't, I'm sorry." Then she reminds me and tells me the stories of our relationships, gets us together. She says, "Oh, we did this thing in 1984. I was like, "Okay, I was three." For some people, that's like, wow, he's old. Some people, he's like, he's young. See, I'm translating again. It's like a different thing. We speak different languages, and different words have different meanings. So for me, I'm the first person from my family, not my wider family, but my small family, that was born in this country. My older brother was born and speaks Creole as his first language. He doesn't anymore, he just speaks English now, because he liked it. He preferred that when he came here. And my parents used to speak Creole, which is their language, the language of the Seychelles, at home, and I would answer in English. And then my mum would say, did you not hear me? So I heard you, but I didn't understand you. I don't know what you said. My mum's favorite phrase when I was growing up was, am I speaking Swahili? Because my mum also speaks Swahili, because she was born in Uganda. And sometimes I would have to say, literally, mum, yes, you are speaking Swahili. I don't speak Swahili. I'm from Southeast London. You know, add a bit of patois in there. Maybe we'll get there, but I just don't understand what you're saying. So I had to, just because my mum's here, you know, when you say things in front of your mum, I had to kind of square that she was going to be happy with me saying these jokes just before the service, because I didn't know she was going to be here. I've edited a few other things out. But we speak different languages, and there are also different ways in which we use words. My mum and dad, actually, my mum, she might question this, but I think she thinks in English most of the time, and then I have a conversation with her, and I know she's not thinking in English. She's either thinking in French or Creole or in Swahili, but she's not thinking in English, because the words that come out in English aren't necessarily in the order or the phrase construction that they should be. And then I have to kind of go, okay, I think you mean this. And my dad definitely doesn't think in English. He thinks in Creole all the time, which is an interesting way to have a discussion as well. Because I have to think, what is he thinking, not just what is he saying? It's a different thing. It's a really different thing. And you do that, even if your parents don't speak another language, young people, you do that all the time. Because your parents are speaking in adult, some sort of weird dialect of English that nobody knows what it is, and you're going, there's an intention here, there's a thing here that they want and they need, and I need to translate that back. I see you laughing, you know this. There's a thing here that I need to translate into me so that I can understand what they're doing. And if we get this wrong, I know there's some consequences if I get this translation wrong. Right? As a young person, this is happening all the time. And as an autistic young person, as a young person who's neurospicy, who's a little bit different in their thought processes, either ADHD or anything else, neurospicy is a new word for you today. I like to call myself, I've got ADHD, so I call myself neurospicy. It's different. It's beautiful. It's like when your food has a little bit of a sprinkle on it. That's me, neurospicy. You're translating the world in a different way. It's just, and you're doing it all the time. And that's why sometimes people who have a different neurology are tired. And people who speak a different language are tired after an interaction. And they need to rest because they've spent all that time translating and working out and trying to work through things. And that's why sometimes when your parents get on you and they're saying lots of things, you're like, wow, I need to step back and have a moment here so I can work out what's going on. So, how does this relate to Acts? Sorry, I've gone off on a mad tangent. But it does, honestly, actually the Bible is really good here. It actually has a really easy message, I think. This part of Acts, the writer is trying to convey something that's happening that we might not pick up because we don't pick up all the cues that are in the writing. We don't always see what's going on because we are not from that culture. So, there's one bit that really stood out for me as a person who comes from a language, a family that's bilingual, or multilingual actually. It says they spoke in their language. And I'm not even going to say what that language is because I can't work that out. But they spoke in Lyconian, I think. 2 years of theology college, I can't pronounce anything. And that's a little drop in the, sometimes in the Bible, what it does is they drop a little phrase in and it helps you understand what's going on. So actually this passage often gets used for perseverance because Paul gets beaten up, They think he's there to throw him out. And then you get up and he gets back in, he gets back in, he runs back in. Actually, what I want to say today is, from my lens, from the way I look at things, this isn't just about perseverance. It may have something to do with perseverance, but it has something to do with something we probably don't hear very often. Two words I'm going to put together: cultural competency. Two big words: cultural, what we do around here; competency, how good we are at understanding those cultures. Cultural competency. Do you understand those? That makes sense? So you do this all the time with your parents. You've got cultural competency speaking adult. You're probably better than most adults are, actually, of doing it between themselves as young people. Actually, a lot of people who are neurospicy, another use of that word, they're very culturally competent because they're constantly having to work their way through the world and see it in a different way, and see it from the way that other people see it, because otherwise they get in trouble. Things don't go well. So I'm saying this passage is about cultural competency because actually, normally when we're looking at Paul, everyone's like, Paul's amazing, Paul's great, he does good things, you know, Paul set up the church, expanded the church around the world. Excellent, good on Paul. This time I think he's got it completely wrong. I think he goes in a situation where it's probably his first time speaking to non-Jewish people or converts. He's speaking to a group of people who have no idea where he's coming from, no idea about the God of Israel or Abraham or all this stuff. They've got no context of the Old Testament. When he talks about scripture, that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about what we have. Just, he's talking about something else. And he goes there and he makes a faux pas and he gets it wrong. He thinks it's going to do what it's done in all the other situations he's been in. And the consequences are dire. He gets beat up. I'm not saying that when we speak, that's going to happen to us, but I'm saying that's what happens to Paul. Paul's not doing too well. But he gets back up, luckily, and carries on. Gift, you know, grace of God. So, what does that have to do with us? So, I'm your new curate. And I have actually a different title from most curates. I'm a pioneer curate. It's a weird little phrase used. In some contexts, that word pioneer will not be a good thing. In this one here, we're going to take it as being a good thing. A pioneer curate is someone who is seen within the church as someone who can speak outside the confines of the church. They speak a different language. And luckily I was raised in the family I was raised in, so I'm used to translating into culture and context all the time. So because I'm a pioneer curate, my role over the next few years is to think how we do this in a language that speaks to the culture around us. And that may look very different. I may do things that you think, ooh, what is Chris doing? Hopefully you're with me when I do it, and therefore I can say, but they did it as well, so it's not just me, it's all right. Sharing the blame is always good. But I'm going to give two things I think that my pioneering will be based on. One is presence. We moved into the parish. This weird area around churches is called a parish. Not everyone knows that. It's just a weird kind of space that they've created around churches, and they call it a parish, and Bridget has the cure of souls in that place, and that's another talk I'll let Bridget do. And I'm supposed to support that. And you are as well. That's the thing of the church. We're all together in that. So this area around us, around the two churches, both here at the Good Shepherd and St. Peter's, further up the road, there's presence. I need to be here. We need to be here, wherever here is. And that means I've moved my family into the parish. Bridget did the same thing when she took her role. I'm a broccoli boy. I was brought up in SE4. I've been living in Catford for 8 years. I find it very hard to move around South East London. those of us who grew up in Southeast London will understand, like, ooh, 2 miles is a long way. But I believe in it wholly that I need to be here. So presence. And the other thing is hearing and listening. Before I speak, I need to hear what's happening and what people are saying. And one way I'm going to do that is, two ways. One is James, Churchwarden James, and me are going to walk the bounds of the parish at some point over the summer. So he's worked out a route so I can see like what the scope of the area is. And the other way is to walk the parish and prayer walk and pray for the area and talk to people and listen to people. And I am offering that over the summer. And further on, I think it'll take me longer than that, we're going to try and walk every road in the parish. And I'd love people to join me, and I can get to know people. We'll walk for about an hour at a time, or half an hour, depending how long you can walk and how long my thighs take to calm down after lots of walking. Sorry, chafing joke. But that's what we're going to do. We can walk and listen and talk to people and pray and do that. So two things. One, to be present. Two, to listen. That's it. That's it for today. That's all we're going to do. And that all comes from the fact that we need to translate sometimes and work out how to listen to each other. Just because we're speaking different languages, even if we're using the same word, we could be speaking a different language.